This is a production of Cornell University.
Selleck?
Yes.
Block?
Here.
Breeden?
Here.
Brown?
Here.
Chopra?
Here.
Desai? Francisco? Adam Gitlin?
Here.
Ross Gitlin? Goldberg? Goldberg? Gurujani?
Yeah.
Hoffman?
Here.
Kay?
Here.
Here. Lee?
Here.
Miller?
Yep.
Mueller?
Here.
Muir?
Here.
Nicoletti?
Here.
Pinckney?
Here.
Patel?
Here.
Rapp?
Here.
Rao?
Yes.
Skelfo? Skelfo? Dolman?
Yeah.
Trefison? Wolford?
Wolford is on a queue.
Yatarian? Robert? Santangelo?
Great. All right. Moving on to the approval of the February 9th, 2012 meeting minutes. Are there any motions on the table?
Call question.
All right, so I'm going to call the question. Is there a second?
Yep.
All right, seeing none, seeing no dissent, the approval of the February 9th, 2012 meeting has been approved. Moving on to the next section, open microphones. Is there anyone in the audience that's not on the agenda or not wanting to discuss what's already on the agenda that would like to speak to the student assembly? We have an open forum right now. All right. Then we're going to move on to our speakers for the student assembly. Eddie Rooker and Graham are the Ithaca County Council members for the fourth ward, and they're here to present to us to talk about numerous different issues in College Town, how the student assembly can help, and plans for the future. So thank you guys so much for coming.
Thanks for having us. Eddie Rooker, I graduated in 2010, and I've been serving for the past 2 years on Town Council.
And I'm Graham Kersnick. I graduated a little earlier than that. And I've been on council since January 1st.
So I guess I just want to start out and present some of the issues pertaining to the top of College Town that we've been seeing, especially over the past month. The first one that I'll touch on is something that's been in the sun a lot, but the uptick of social activity in College Town and working with residents and their concerns about what that brings when there's more parties happening in College Town. The noise, the people kind of wandering up the streets, the fights that might happen. Working with the residents to address that and see what we can do and what we are actually able to do. Sometimes, most of the time, we look for it outside of police work. I mean, that's always an option, but what we can do from a social side to work with students to I guess, tone down some of the partying or make sure that at least when you do it, it doesn't affect what our permanent residents. So that's just something that has, for whatever reasons, increased this year, especially looking at that with residents.
So I'll talk just a little bit about development in College Town. And this is something that you probably are aware of is going on. It's going to continue to go on. Council has for many years put together a comprehensive plan for, or rather, a College Town plan. That was not actually passed last year because of some issues relating to parking. And so right now that plan for College Town, which did include some provisions for basically better designed buildings, I think that's something that's on hold and is going to come up again. In the meantime, there are proposals for developments. You've probably heard about 307 College Avenue, which is currently a building being proposed for that location. And I think what council is going to be doing is looking at these proposals with, I guess, the best parts of the College Town plan in place. And I think there's an opportunity, as I perhaps talk about the comprehensive plan, which is a separate topic, but I think what we'd like to do is both Eddie and myself and the reps on the third ward is try and get more student input in terms of some of the amenities or other developments that might happen in College Town. So I'm hoping that we can get some idea about how to move that forward. As you know, with the recent issues about some of the parking, and I think there's been an acknowledgement that there really isn't much site eating to do in College Town. And so I think as council looks at development, we want to include some input or some more input from students.
And the next thing I want to touch on, actually it touches on development as well as Grandma talked about the comprehensive plan after, but it's the grocery store. And it's beginning to look at and talk to students as well as permanent residents about what College Town's lacking and what would really make it better for everyone. And one of the first things that always comes up is a grocery store on something that provides fresh fruit and vegetables and meat. I know we have Wilson Farms and Jason's right now, and those are both great, but when it comes to getting a lot of the fresher foods that you would usually go to Wegmans for, it would be great if you didn't have to use your car. Maybe you wouldn't even, you know, the parking issues, so you would have to bring your car into College Town. But find a way to get a grocery store into College Town. I'm working with Jennifer Wilkins and a group of students called Design Connect, who are going to start and probably reach out to you all for input, looking in the feasibility of a grocery store, trying to see what the demand is and then what are the things that you use. Obviously the fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, meat, deli meat, whatever, but also prepared foods as well, and what would drive you to that store. The issue that we run into with a lot of these things, just a little background information, and why the grocery store is a little bit more of an issue than you would think it would be, is that there's only business 8 months out of the year. When you only have, you know, 4 months where you're not really getting any business, it makes it tough, and it makes the economics of starting what seems like a logical, you know, business in College Town a little bit tougher. It's the same thing with the bars, really. So working with this Design and Connect team to see where it go, what stores might fit well, and what it would need, hopefully we'll start to push that forward. As we look at development, as we look at zoning, we look at incentives for a grocery store, within the zoning, but starting to look at the needs of the students and then how we're able to facilitate that through a number of ways.
Yeah, and I'm hoping we'll have a chance for Q&A at the end here, so I won't touch more on that, but let me also bring you up to date. There is an effort for the city as a whole to develop a comprehensive plan, which I'm on the comprehensive plan committee. Right now we're in the first phase of that, which is really looking for public input, and so the committee's organized a number of meetings in neighborhoods. They've met with a lot of constituents and other stakeholder groups to try and get some kind of vision for what Ithaca is going to look like in 20 or 30 years. And so I think one of the certainly the recognitions from the mayor and the new council is that we really need to diversify the economic base. And it's great to have the educational institutions here, but the city is very dependent on those, and as you know, we don't have a very big tax base, and so what we need to do is look at ways to diversify that, develop some more opportunities for people within the city, and so we're looking at encouraging light industry or urban appropriate industry within the city limits. And I think this is an opportunity, if anybody in student groups, or I know we've had some input already from people in planning and stuff like that, but if you go to the city website, you'll see there's a comprehensive plan. There's actually an online survey. It's really easy to fill out. And we encourage not only this assembly, but any groups that you know of that might be interested in this. Go look at the survey, fill it in. If you want more information, there's a link. The committee's not quite as big as the assembly. There's about 15 people, and so there's a lot of people working on this comprehensive plan, and we do want that student input for that development.
And again, tying back into what Graham was saying about student input, the next part I just wanted to touch on was us looking for a way to maybe formalize student input, and one of the things that Graham and I both talked about, neither of us no longer being students, but wanting to stay connected, finding a good way to make sure we stay in touch with that group, with you all, with other student leaders on campus, and starting to explore what the best way to create that group is, whether it's the students, is whether it's just a summit, four times a year, and that's one of those things that we would start to talk with you all about what the best way to do that would be, because you know, it's tough in the MO or the kind of when people think about students and they're not that connected to the city and they don't know how to voice, and we need a way to bridge that gap between what you all are thinking, the complaints that you all have in your day-to-day lives with the city, but at the end of the day, stay in this East Hill and don't end up being downtown. We want to start working on a formal route for you to have more of a voice in the city.
And I think connected to that, I guess there's been a lot of discussion recently about high-risk drinking and general conditions in College Town, and I think one of the things that's important to me as a College Town resident is to try and address the issue of landlord-student relationships in terms of not only the quality of housing, but what's needed in the community to try and, just integrate students more into the community. I think there's a disconnect between permanent residents that live in College Town and close to College Town and the students that live there. I know there are many issues that I've already talked about with some students in terms of property maintenance and stuff like that. So I think one of the things that Eddie and I have talked about and we would like to really encourage is some kind of real, I don't want to say maybe advocacy group, but some kind of group of students that really starts to give us more information about the situation with off-campus housing. I mean, we hear stories about plumbing not being fixed or snow plowing not being done and stuff like that. But I think, you know, until we actually get a more, consistent way of getting the input and the feedback, it's difficult for us on council to really address these issues with the landlord community. And I think, as I say, there are issues on both sides. I mean, it's easy to finger point and say, well, the students are bad, they mess up my housing, and vice versa. And I think the only way really to address that is to start to get a consistent input from both sides, namely the landlords and the students, but also the community. I think this really ties to the College Town plan and also the comprehensive plan in terms of trying to have College Town be more of a community, you know, so that when you move off campus, you come into that community, it's a little bit more interesting, there's more to do there. As Eddie said, Design Connect is actually looking at a kind of partnership idea that Jennifer Wilkins came up about, some kind of community learning hub that would be in College Town, connected to the grocery store, but could be expanded beyond that with student input for more, you know, activities, you know, besides eating, drinking, and whatever else goes on in College Town, I guess.
So, yeah, I mean, basically that's a real brief overview of what we're looking at with College Town. I think when Graham talked about it being community, our work a lot of times is people just look at it as just the legislative side or, you know, calling up the IPD, but really the most effective way to deal with these things is see how, like, in a community sort of fashion, we can facilitate discussions and change the norms before we have to go into what is kind of bureaucracy of it all. So this is a great first step, and we just want to hear your questions and your thoughts on what we've just talked to you all about.
Yeah, so we, again, just wanted to thank you both for coming. This is going to be a very informative discussion, and a little bit different than some of our other meetings. Graham and Eddie have asked that the Student Assembly kind of provide feedback on the idea of the student group advocacy group for College Town and also any of the different ideas that they just mentioned. So if you'd like to say any of the comments, this is kind of their first foray into getting student input besides the College Town Council. So any comments would be greatly appreciated, I think, to start this discussion. So first on the speakers list is Vice President of Finance, Adam Nicoletti. And before you begin, if anyone in the audience would like to speak, just raise your hand. Our Vice President of Internal Operations, John Rao, will be coming around to collect your name. So just feel free to speak.
I guess first off, you know, from personally my perspective, I'm very impressed with how you guys have identified a lot of the key issues. I would say that as someone who's lived in College Town for 2 years, those are a lot of things that students are looking for. My first question and more comment is around the development in College Town. And I'm curious, you guys touched on a lot of the commercial development of creating community, grocery store, different areas that make it feel more like everyone's connected, and I think that's great. On the residential side, what are the barriers to development there? I think one of the biggest complaints about College Town, and I think college communities in general, is that rent prices are extremely high because there's such a restriction on the supply in the market. So, you know, is it just a factor of people don't want to develop farther out of that kind of central radius? What's, you know, prohibiting that kind of stuff?
We'll both chip in on that.
Okay, know. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think supply is a big part of that, of the prices. Is we're, as a county, I think we're at about 2% occupancy, and really healthy is about 10-11%, so that's a huge need. Collegetown specifically, up until last year, there was a moratorium on development as they developed the Collegetown plan, so kind of asking people to hold off on what they, you know, wanted to develop as housing until we can kind of figure out how we wanted to look in heights and whatnot. So you saw, I think that's why over the past, you know, 4 or 5 years, not much development. Right outside where we do that line is, or I can say we, my predecessors do that line, there's the development going up on State Mitchell Street, Collegetown Terrace. So there was development kind of on the fringe of that. And now you're seeing other developments start to move along on any street. And I think over the next few years you will see a lot more. But we are looking at zoning, and I think that is what some developers are building off on, is to kind of see what the wood incentives might be put in. We did vote on zoning last year. It didn't end up passing for a number of reasons, parking being a big one of those. But I think right now the lack of development that would address what is a high demand is competitiveness, just because the zoning is about to change, whether it be the question of whether it's before or the comprehensive plan. I'm not sure if I answered all the
questions. Is it like, you know, landlords don't want to give up some of their ability to develop farther out, or is it, you know, I guess...
Well, I've been told, correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, that a large group of the student body doesn't want to live more than X hundred yards from campus. And so a lot of landlords say, well, I've got this great property, you know, it's not so expensive, but the students don't want to rent it because it's, you know, down the hill a little bit or something like that. So that's one issue. The other issue, just related to the development, as Eddie said, is there has been a moratorium recently, and now, as we know, there's a very large development going along State Street there, which will definitely have an impact. Not necessarily on Collegetown in terms of availability of space, but certainly the idea, and I don't know how this would work, but it's being developed for graduate students primarily, but I don't know how you can say one or the other is going to be living there. It's certainly not legally, you can't discriminate, but the point is that will have a large impact on Collegetown, I think, and downtown. And so that right now that impact is unknown. The Collegetown plan in general was, it was generally agreed that the idea would be that we would have and encourage fairly high density development in the core of Collegetown. The core means like College Avenue and Dryden, that kind of intersection and blocks close to that. And then further out, the neighborhoods surrounding that, smaller houses, the smaller properties, would be protected with zoning that would allow that development, but then protect the surrounding neighborhoods. So the students that still want to live in more traditional housing can still have some options there. As Eddie said, right now that there is beginning to be proposals developed. There's one 307 College Avenue. There are many issues on that. It does incorporate the opportunity for a grocery store, which is great. I think that's generally going to be a good development. The big issue that we need to address in Collegetown, quite frankly, is parking. And that is, you know, what can we do to encourage the whole community not to use cars? Because I think it's a real negative aspect of Collegetown, and it's really holding up a lot of the development. And so I think we've got a lot of work to do to work with incoming students, with the student body in general, to find out what is needed in Collegetown so that you don't necessarily have to have a car. And if you do, what do we do with it? Because to provide on-site parking for a lot of these developments is just not feasible anymore. It's too expensive. And I think it really detracts from the buildings because you're spending a huge amount developing this parking. And then the developers say, well, I can't afford to give you guys a decent accommodation. And so I think there's a general consensus on council that, and on some of the other aspects of city boards, that we need to explore options for really looking at that more effectively to get better quality buildings and try and reduce the need for for bringing it to pass. Yeah.
And if I can ask a second thing. Another issue with students partying in College Town, and I'm sure that landlords would see that students are wrecking their buildings, so why would you want to invest in new furniture and improvements to the buildings if students are going to wreck it? I don't know if that is a landlord perspective. That's just my guess. And on the student side, there's grumblings that my couches are from the 70s. Nothing has been repainted. When I come in, you say you're going to take my security deposit if I don't clean up after myself, yet everything is not vacuumed when I come in. And there are grumblings like that, and it kind of goes back to this, if you have a cruddy property already, I'm not going to pay as much respect to it when I'm partying, let's say, but then I'm a landlord and I don't want to, upkeep it, or I don't want to improve it because I think that people are going to do that. And it's like an endless cycle. I think that's kind of what happens, and I can see where people are on both sides. So that's just my personal perspective on that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been the consensus that you have been hearing from a lot of students, which is why I think something like the input, the student advocacy group, is something that I know had you worked on when you were an undergraduate, and can be something that we can restart to get those type of reasons taken care of. So next on the speakers list is Chris Sanders. You can just roll up your chair.
Hi everyone, I'm Chris Sanders. I am the current IFC president, and so I just wanted to come and join the discussion today. And from my experience sitting in on the community council last fall towards the end of the semester, I know that there is a lot of talk about, incidences involving the group community, the high-risk drinking, and so I wanted to come forward. And we had a couple of things to talk about, but first of all, my first question is, has there been a consensus by landlords and also the community residents that part of the uptick in the social incidences have been because of changes in the grief recognition policy? Have they seen, I think that's something that they talked about a little bit, but as parties that were starting to move away from the fraternity facilities, is that something that, the city residents are seeing?
I don't think residents are aware of what's happening. I was president on the campus and seeing a lot of what's happening now. I think that's obviously a connection that can be made. I don't think we can know. Part of it even was the weather in the fall was later, was nicer much later. So those things all play a role. But I don't think when you're asking the consensus from landlords or communities, I don't think they know. I think they're just recognizing what happened. But I think we can all infer that.
And I guess so. The second piece that I wanted to talk about, and after having conversations with some of the members of the essay, one of the ideas that we did, trying to get back to this more of the action-oriented outcomes, was potentially having, a tri-council and essay ad hoc committee to look at some of these issues, just knowing that a large proportion of upperclassmen in the group system do end up moving to College Town. And part of the things that we're really trying to work together as a group system is to look at how can we start to re-engage our upperclassmen within the group experience, and knowing that this also could mean participating in more of a neighborhood legal feel within College Town, but also knowing that some of the higher strength behavior can be associated with the group community. We feel as though that from the group perspective, it was something that we wanted to bring forward, and after having conversations, we think it could be a good way for our boards or organizations to work together to address an issue that reaches all communities here at Cornell. So
I think the more you can pull in different constituencies, and we have the College Town Neighborhood Council as well, so as you have discussions and you want to work with the community members, trying to bring those people in with there as well.
So I guess the question that Chris is kind of posing to you all is, if there's a coalition of students, if you get IFC panel and the students, some of the members are interested in the topic, to start working together. I know Julie is basically from the Office of Campus Housing is interested in being on this as well. Would you all be willing to work with us to try to get this, be an integral part of this committee as well?
I think, let me just comment on some of the things that Chris said. I mean, I think there's a perception, but I also think there's an acknowledgement in a wider section, cross section of Cornell now, following that College Town Neighborhood Council meeting in December, that this is an issue that needs to be addressed from many perspectives. So you can't just leave it to one group to say, well, you go and deal with that. That's just not going to work. And so I think, you know, certainly the representatives in the third ward, Ellen and Donna and myself and Eddie, are definitely committed to looking at this, because I think we do realize that it's a community issue, and the students are part of that College Town community. And so Cornell also needs to be involved in this, because there have been significant changes to the regulations at Cornell, and that does have an impact on the neighborhoods, and I think we're seeing that. There's no consensus yet, because I think it's all anecdotal, but I think this group is an ideal opportunity to try and really look at this and get the evidence together with people from Cornell and say, okay, how are we going to really address this? Because I think there is a recognition that it's a problem. We just don't know what's driving it, I think.
Next on the speakers list is Executive Vice President Gitlin.
I actually sort of had a similar question to add Nicoletti, to sort of more just to what extent. I mean, I completely agree that the uptake in social activity has had a lot, has had, you know, negative effects, but to what degree, and I was at, you know, a couple of the Neighborhood Council and Landlord Association meetings, so to what degree, I guess, landlords are going to open the dialogue as, you know, from their end with students, to the extent that they understand that students also have sort of issues. But it was sort of answered, you know,
well, maybe let me just make a comment. I mean, that's partly our, council representatives in College Town. That's part of our responsibility, is to then, you know, and the landlords have an association, and so we can go to that. In fact, I think a couple of us are planning to attend an upcoming meeting either in March or April, and this will be on the agenda for that. And so we'll be talking to them as a group to say, okay, we need to recognize that there are issues on both sides, and it's not just a student issue. There's also an issue of the general environment in College Town. And certainly personally, I think my goal would be to start raising the expectations of people in College Town, you know, that, you know, this is the kind of thing that needs to be treated from a community-wide perspective. And I think, as I say, we don't expect you to go to the colleges, to the landlord associations. That's primarily, I think, a council, and then to get those groups together, and eventually, hopefully, some constructive solutions.
Yeah, I think I just reiterated that everyone understands, or Grant and I especially know, that it's not one side, that there's problems on both sides, and it's not with everyone. It's a small portion of the student body, it's a small portion of the landlords, but those, you know, tend to clash, and you hear about that. So, like, moving forward, mediation seems to be kind of what needs to happen. There needs to be some way to facilitate the communication. Without, you know, we don't want to have to get to the point where landlords have to go and sue renters because they, you know, have issues with how the houses are on premise. Not saying that it's that, but we'd rather have it be mediation. And on the other side, we don't want to have to. We would like to, you know, if the heat's not being turned on, or your plumbing's broken or whatever, you know, and you're not getting responses, giving students a place to go for that as well. So yeah, I think trying to find that middle area before it gets to the extremes.
And I think part of that problem is there is a placing of the off-campus housing website, but it's not publicized at all for students. So maybe if we can work with you all as well to get the word out, not only on campus but off and through College Town, that might be something that the student interest group can also address as well. Next on the speaker list is Representative Locke.
Great. So just first as a comment, I definitely say from a student perspective, I think that the argument that we destroy houses or that we cause a lot of damage to them, even with these increased parties, is like a little overdone. I think at the end of the day, like, the worst that some of these houses will see is some, like, spill fear, but, you know, quite frankly, in the condition that many of them are in, it's not really a big problem. I guess my question is more focused on something that isn't always talked about, which is safety inside the houses. You know, as we unfortunately learned last year, many of these buildings are, you know, they're dangerous. And I guess my question was from, you know, legislatively, what is, you know, are there any trends that the Common Council is working on to try and enforce new, better safety standards? Because I think that at the end of the day, we can complain about, you know, couches being old or whatnot, but I think that, you know, the fact that a lot of these, the locks are broken, or there's, you know, the smoke detectors don't work, or things like that are things that are really concerning to a lot of residents.
Yeah, and I think, I actually had a conversation last year with who's now the police chief, Tom Parsons, who's a Cornell guy as well, and he agrees in that he's trying to figure that out on his end. He knows just the nature of the housing in Collegetown. It was built as single family homes, and it's evolved, has been cut up into, you know, more rooms than really they were built for, and more wear and tear than they were really built for. So I think there's part of it's a combination of increasing or seeing what we can do as far as building code maintenance, or building code regulation, enforcing that, working with the police fire department. I think education on the student side as well, knowing, you know, some of it as far as fire smoke detectors can be done via the education and trying to get students to take the lead on that. And then the last thing is, it gets back to what we talked about before, is in some ways the answer to this is going to be development. And around you see houses, I speak for myself on this, but I think in 5 to 10 years, as the zoning changes, Collegetown, especially Central Collegetown, it's going to start to look a little different because there is a lot of opportunity to upgrade the update of the housing in Collegetown. So there's a lot of different ways. I think you're right, and I would say that Tom Parsons, he just became fire chief last year, is definitely concerned with that, especially after the death of Brian Crow last year. I think that's something that really brought attention to what I think we all sort of knew, you know, really highlighted it.
Yeah, I think certainly the development issue is going to play into this because for new developments, there are very different and much more stringent safety codes. A lot of this situation is unfortunately coming about because of the issue of grandfathering. That is, you have these old buildings that basically we can't really go in there and say, you've got to do this because, you know, those buildings were, as I say, grandfathered, and the condition of them is not appropriate for the number of people in a lot of cases. And so certainly with new development, there's requirements for sprinklers and much more stringent design codes for fire safety. So I think that's definitely an issue. And as we've said, as development is encouraged in Collegetown, there will come a point when some of these older buildings that are, let me just say, marginal economically, either the landlords are going to have to improve them, or they will probably end up selling them. It has actually happened in a couple of cases that I'm aware of, where houses that did have students in them actually reverted to smaller groups, not necessarily single family, but smaller groups of property owners that actually have bought the house and are doing it up and fixing it up for a smaller number of people. And so I think you can expect that to happen as more options become available, as new development happens in Collegetown.
Great. Next one,
because
this is Vice President of Public Relations, Gary
Thomas. Eddie Grant, thanks, Mike. I think my question is more catered to the plan you have to build, or the vision about a community in Collegetown. I was curious as to whether this community in the future is going to involve a partnership with the university, or is it just going to be you guys and your work in Collegetown, or is it going to be both? Because I think that there are definitely a few things that the university could add, like another fitness center in Collegetown, for example, would do us all good, things like that.
Yeah, I think, and not to go into too many gory details, but there are certain concerns about, Cornell's mission as an educational institution, the fact that it's tax exempt, and so there's these issues have to be looked at carefully because, as I said earlier, we're trying to increase the economic base of the city, and so. Let me just say, if there's a need for a fitness center in Collegetown, I would hope that we can encourage development that would allow a commercial group to come in and operate a fitness center. I think Cornell would probably be reluctant to get into that because of their tax-exempt status. I think they can provide facilities on campus, but when they go out, and I know there's the Cornell master plan has some provisions for development on land that Cornell already owns, especially at East Hill. But when it comes to Collegetown, I think there's a general consensus that basically that property is too expensive for Cornell to be really interested in. That's not to say that we couldn't have some kind of partnership between private developers and Cornell, certainly in terms of renting space. And so there's been some discussion about having offices that might be appropriate, and certainly one in my mind is the off-campus housing office. I mean, it certainly makes sense to me at first sight to have that off-campus, maybe in College Town. And that would, again, increase the resources that are available in College Town. And so I'm not sure that I see a lot of direct involvement by College Town, by Cornell, in terms of the developments in College Town, just because of the land prices. But I certainly think many of us want to encourage these partnerships. And in fact, this Design Connect study is actually primarily going to be looking at some kind of partnership between Cornell or supported entity and a future grocery store.
As you know, I think whatever we do involving the college and community is obviously going to have Cornell involved. It's just inevitable that you're going to have students, that you're going to have faculty. We work with Gary Stewart and John Goodman, who are in the community relations office pretty closely. So the city in general works very closely with Cornell, and whatever happens in College Town, we'll work with them. Graham's right, when it comes to actual development, it gets a little stickier, unfortunately, I think. It was less messy, and the issues that do exist weren't there, it'd be great. But the tax-exempt basis, the tax-exempt status of the university is troublesome for some people, especially when they see it. You know, I think somewhere along the lines of 60% of the taxable land in Ithaca is tax-exempt because of Cornell. I know there's a lot of arguments on it, but that does put a burden on the city. So. Definitely, influence, definitely working with them, but as far as development, it's a little bit stickier than it should be, maybe.
Next on the speaker's list is Representative Scalfo. And for your information, Representative Scalfo is the new Red Lights Chair. You all met with ULSU last semester, so this is the new person you may want to work with as well.
Thank you very much for coming. Right now, we're in a very primitive stage of research whether or not Cornell would benefit from going smoke-free, and that would put a lot of pressure on College Town for students that smoke. Do you see that as potentially being an issue for College Town, College Town residents, and potentially College Town housing, because students that smoke wouldn't opt to live on West Campus, they'd opt to live in College Town or the surrounding area. What do you think about that?
Never even thought about that. I don't even know what the policies are right now. I'm not on campus at all.
We're doing research whether or not Cornell would benefit from going completely smoke-free. Mm-hmm. The policy right now is nobody can smoke within 30 feet of a Cornell-owned building.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it obviously would have an effect.
I think so. Yeah, as you may know, there was actually this issue was addressed downtown on the Commons, and so that was controversial. I think there's a general acceptance that, you know, obviously bars and restaurants and stuff, you can't smoke in those. And so if this becomes, you know, if policy is changed at Cornell, we'd have to look at that and see what, there would obviously be an impact on College Town. And so you wouldn't want people going across this line and just lining up to smoke on the other side of the line there without having some kind of provision in terms of, you know, the city-owned land. And so I think we'd have to look at that and see what the Cornell policy was. But I would imagine if that changes, then there's going to be an impact. It took a long time to get the input on the Commons, and it's still fairly controversial. You know, business is concerned about the impacts and stuff like that. But I think, you know, in general, council tries to weigh these different viewpoints and come up with something that's hopefully for the benefit of the entire community, at least almost any decision is going to have some dissent. And so I think what we have to do is say, well, on balance, this looks like the best policy moving forward. And I think when it came to the Commons, that's what was actually put through as a restriction on in that area. And I think, you know, in general, I mean, I used to smoke. And I think it's much better to try and, you know, encourage people not to smoke. It's not a great habit as far as I'm concerned. you do need to respect people's rights, and I think that's the important thing when we consider changes to policy. We have to do that. So I think, you know, we'll have to look at what Cornell comes up with and then see the impact, which there will be some impact definitely on college.
Yeah, I think looking at what the decision process and the people that were involved with the Commons might be a good resource for that process. It's Smoke-free at Tompkins? Or
right, yeah. So probably, I mean, if you're interested, we can get you the resources and connect you to the people that looked at the whole issue of creating this smoke-free zone downtown. And so that might be interesting for you to look at. Sure.
That would be great. I think a couple of our representatives are working to see if the smoke-free campus is the way we want to start.
Sending
around these
companies.
So any information on that would be
fantastic.
Next on speaker list is Representative Mueller.
I thought something again. So I was curious. You know, we've got a lot of joint enforcement done by the police department and Cornell Police, especially at our early parts of last year, at the beginning of the semester, and at the beginning of this semester. And also we've started really publicizing here for our students the mental amnesty law that has passed in New York State. I was just curious what your perceptions of the police department's enforcement. We know that Cornell is definitely on the right page and knows that to sort of give leeway in terms of in cases where people are very sick and calling for help for an alcohol or drug overdose. I was wondering what implications you've seen in College Town or from the police department on your end.
I haven't particularly spoke with that to about it. It's probably a good point, something to touch base on. We worked with some Ithaca College students last year when New York State was looking to pass this, and we were actually in the early stages of passing it for the city itself, and then New York State passed it, so we ended up having to, but we haven't really had any conversations with the IPD since then, so I think that's a good point to follow up with them and see. There's an interesting kind of collaboration with IPD and CPD where there's information sharing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another aspect of this is when IPD and Bangs Ambulance or the fire department's called into College Town for an incident, how much information sharing happens and what happens with that information. So I think learning more about that would be beneficial. But yeah, I haven't followed up on it yet.
I have a sort of follow-up question to that also. You know, you just mentioned another key point that I was thinking of is you know, a lot of obviously alcohol abuse is sort of an issue on our campus now that we're really trying to look at head-on from a lot of different perspectives. And I was wondering to what extent you sort of include College Town residents, Cornell students, and those who just venture to College Town and don't even live there, sort of as extensions of the community, in the sense that if someone is stopped or is transported because of an alcohol or drug issue, and you know, given amnesty, to what extent is the city looking to collaborate with Cornell and offer similar treatment programs, sort of? You know, we have basics, for example. You know, if you get a JA, if you get a judicial administrative charge for drinking or something, you go and do basics with Gannett Health Services. And we do have similar programs in the city, but I was wondering if we could have some congruency between our programs and the city's programs, especially since the medical amnesty that we have in College Town now mirrors what we have on campus here.
So you're talking about extending Cornell programs to city residents?
Well, more so, say a student is transported from College Town, and given amnesty by a police department officer, you know, if they were on Cornell's campus, they would go into basics. Mm-hmm. Do you have something, any plans or any thoughts to do something like that for any student or individual who is transported off campus somewhere?
That would make sense. I think that's something that maybe do. I will follow up on that with the police chief and kind of see what the status is. I'm not sure if there would be information sharing, but that does make sense. I'm not sure what is required as far as when the IPD does respond to a call in College Town, verify the student status. Although you can reasonably assume that almost everybody in College Town who's getting the ambulance calls is probably a college student for now, but they can't make that assumption right off the bat and then going for now. So I'll definitely follow up on that and let you know what I'm going to give you.
I mean, legally, obviously, the people are treated the same wherever they are. I mean, the amnesty law is enforced by and followed by IPD and Cornell Police, obviously. And I think they do collaborate. They don't kind of say, oh, that's your problem. I mean, that's, they're interested. And I think in general, of course, the amnesty law is there to try and, you know, save lives. And I think, and encourage people to call the services when they're needed. And so I think, you know, in terms of the student status, I think if they were an enrolled student, the Cornell services would be the first choice. There are city services available as well. They may not be so extensive, and I'm not sure if you're asking to have those kind of expanded or whether, you know, I mean, those are available. If a student is not enrolled at Cornell, for instance, they're still a resident of the city, and so they'd get the same opportunities for services that any other resident of the city would.
I just want to respond a little bit. I'm an assistant dean for fraternity sororities, and I work with off-campus housing and co-ops. And just about what we do with students that are transported off-campus, I'm also a crisis manager for the university. They're not under the same judicial code, but if we're informed that a student is transported, because sometimes that does come through IPD, Cornell Police, even though students might not be required to go to basics, they are sent a letter from Gannett, and to really beyond strongly encourage them to come to Gannett. So they are definitely, they do have that service, and we hope that students respond to that letter.
Next one
speaker
is Student Trustee
Boris. Hey guys. So I've spoken with both of you a little bit about this, but as we've talked a lot in this meeting already and in other forums about how landlords could make the whole renting process in College Town easier, safer, smoother for students. And I think there are loads of good ideas about how to do that. And my fear is that it's hard to motivate the landlords to do anything, insofar as they're in a fairly comfortable position with a, you know, group of students that they know are going to need to buy every year. So my question is, what do you think we can do? What do landlords want out of the process? What do you think we can do to make them want to do some of these changes? I know that at past meetings they've talked about things up to and including bursaring fees through Cornell, which is a pretty scary thought for most students. So I just, you know, as seeing as a lot of these landlords are your constituents, what have you been hearing about what landlords would want, and what could they bring? What could Cornell or students bring to the table to improve the position?
You talk about the resident process. You're talking about a number of things, Matt. Like the when leases are signed, kind of that rush to the beginning of the year. Is that part of it?
I really mean the whole process in general, because I think there are a myriad of student concerns, whether it's safety, as Jeff talked about, or that. But I feel like a lot of students feel like they have no power to change anything about that. And so I guess if, what can students do, but more importantly, is there something that Cornell could do or step in that would help in this process, that like landlords would say, okay, we'd be willing to change certain practices if students would do this or if Cornell would do this?
Well, I think, let me just say, I've had a discussion with Julie about some programs and other universities in terms of when properties can be shown and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely plenty of opportunities to improve that process. And I think as part of that, I think this is why I think this advocacy group is so important, because, you know, there are these ideas out there, but they don't really get followed up. And I think that's what needs to happen, is we need to see these ideas actually, down on paper, but maybe put into the electronic device, and this group to consistently work on it, rather than just kind of work on it for a while and then have it drop away. Because I think there's a general consensus, certainly amongst the elected officials right now, that the problem has gotten very serious in terms of the whole community is kind of, you know, not in a good situation right now. And so this is an important component of that. And I think encouraging the landlords and showing them what might be a way to address you know, some of the concerns about the pressure that students feel in terms of having to sign leases before they're ready and stuff like that. And so I would certainly be willing, and I'm sure the other elected officials in College Town are willing, to work on that, to work on a program that would actually resolve some of these issues with the landlords. The issue about showing, you know, putting some kind of restriction on when apartments can be shown. I mean, they have to be convinced that everybody's going to be involved in that, and that the students buy into that as well, because otherwise we're just going to say, you're going to do this, and then somebody's going to go, well, I'm desperate, I want to rent right away, and the whole thing collapses. And so I think that's why it's important to get them involved and say, this, you're still going to get your income, your renters, it's just that it's perhaps a little bit more in a relaxed atmosphere when people can make better decisions. And I will say that also with the increased development, that one would hope that that would also reduce some of this pressure, because there's going to be more available. And so now I would hope, I mean, we're talking about a lot more accommodation in College Town. The building that's being proposed, and this is not to say that it's going to go forward, but that's up to 100 people. And as you probably know, there's going to be some changes on the block on Dryden between College Avenue and Linden. The Palms is unfortunately closing after many years, but that will definitely be developed with accommodation and perhaps other retail opportunities, that whole block. And so all those developments, I think, will, you know, together with our efforts, really try and hopefully change this kind of unsatisfactory condition of how the rental market works in College Town.
I
think the student group that you talked about, I think that's one key here is just you know, a lot of these issues and voicing them, Grant and I can't deal them all together, but if we were able to get a group of a collaboration, I guess, of both students and business owners and landlords working with the Calistine Neighborhood Council, I think we can develop something that's a little bit more valuable and much more effective than just Graham and I trying to, you know, sit at home and think about this. I think then back to the actual issues, the lack of supply is definitely the nature of a lot of this. When there's not a lot of competition, you're going to get the issues of quality. I think the other big part about this that a group could solve, and definitely working with Julie's office at Hoskins Housing, is educating students what their rights as tenants are. I think that's another gap when you have issues. Just, you know, this problem with your maintenance. I think actually Julie Holcomb, I talked to her yesterday. She was at the president's council on alcohol and other drugs, and she was kind of astonished because, you know, a lot of these things you can just call the building department and say, you know, sort of tattle on your own house. But if your landlord's not taking care of what is a safety issue or just a quality of life issue like plumbing or something, we can work with the building department to figure some of that out. So, you know, educating students on what their rights are and what their avenues are is another big part that can really help them improve that the situation.
So, we don't have a follow-up question. I'm sorry, but we saw two more questions. Feel free if you need
our
needs to
line up.
Next
is
Representative
Green. Gotcha. All right. Thank you, guys. Sorry about keeping you.
No.
I was just trying to make a quick cost. I was just wondering, do you guys, as far as the student advocacy group, what, have you guys thought about the structure and makeup of the group, or, you know, how you see what involved, or what organization you're in?
No.
Okay.
Very early stages. No, let me just add, I think that's really, in a sense, it's up to this body or whatever. I think what we're saying is that we see this as a need for successful development in College Town. I mean, I think the community in general have addressed several issues that need to be resolved. This is one of them. And it is getting, as Eddie said, and I've heard this from individuals. I heard it from an individual on Tuesday night. They had no idea how the renting process worked, you know, and some of the rights weren't understood and stuff like that. So I think that in general needs to be better communicated year to year. I mean, maybe some people find out, but then that knowledge gets lost. And so I think it's important that whatever's set up has a life, you know, that doesn't just disappear when one group leaves Cornell. We would want that to, as I say, continue, but then make sure that there's a good way to liaise with the city through we're suggesting, you know, either through the Collegetown Neighborhood Council, which then has most of the, in fact, the four elected officials always go to those Collegetown Neighborhood Council meetings. And so that would be at least an initial thought, is to have that group liaise directly with the Collegetown Neighborhood Council, because that's an established group that meets every month, and city officials, the fire chief, the police chief are often there at those meetings. And so that's an opportunity, and that would be a body for them to bring in perhaps the Landlord Association and say, okay, we're going to have a joint meeting here that we'll need to do.
Yeah, I'd just say, I mean, at the very beginning stages, I think, you know, just being around understanding with the leadership structure on campuses, we definitely want, you know, groups, Red Light, SA, a number of other groups involved, so we get all the different niches in campus, but when it comes to actually numbers and how it's set up, really, you know, we're not saying you do the work, we're just saying we need your advice, and you know what works best, and what works best as far as it's sustainable, which I think really is the key really is that this group that we're not going to start, and then 2 years later, when we're starting to leave campus, not existing anymore. We're trying to figure out what the best way to set it up and make it relevant for the next coming period of time. So hopefully this is the beginning of that conversation.
Great, thank you. Do I have one more quick question?
No, you can ask follow-up a little later, but just Representative Patel is our last question, and then we have to move on.
So my question is basically in regards to this sort of car-free vision of Collegetown, and I'm wondering if you have any other plans other than maybe just getting a grocery store. You've maybe looked into maybe moving like a farmer's market there, some sort of weekend market, maybe just improving the transportation too, so it's like Wegmans through like public transportation. I'm wondering if you just touched on that.
I haven't, you know, looked into too much what else to be added. You know, the efficiencies are, you know, one thing in that conversation yesterday, retail, and people talked about online buying and how that affected that, but I think trying to build that up, you know, a farmer's market element would be great, but that's another thing that, you know, you need to work with outside groups. It's tough to legislate a lot of that. But as far as vision, I guess the transportation side, we definitely want to increase public transportation. We know we want to get rid of parking, specifically on the parking requirement, trying to be creative about how you incentivize or enforce bus passes and car share really staying that program. So we're normally going to have to rely on that heavily. It's just, I think we're in a stage right now when we're looking at the zoning is how you create that. Last year we looked at payment in lieu of parking in the zoning that didn't pass, and that wasn't really that popular. So now we're kind of looking back again, what can we, as new development comes in, put in place that in lieu of parking that addresses the transportation issue. So again, we're in that brainstorming phase, and that's another thing that we need creativity from your side of what we could get. Because I think also that education, again, students don't, I know I didn't until I graduated and kind of had to go downtown more often, but and got a bus pass from the city, was use the bus system and know how to get the Wegmans with that. So trying to increase education there as well as car share.
Yeah, and I think I would just add a couple of points. I mean, I think it is important to understand why people want to bring cars in the first place. So what do you need a car for? I've heard a lot of people say, well, I use it once a week for grocery shopping. Okay, so we address that and say, okay, so we have a grocery store that will address some of that. As you say, you increase the transportation to Wegmans. I know during the week it takes two buses to get down there, and so that can certainly be addressed. I think what we want to try and do is look at options. As I said, I think there's a general conviction that increased density in college towns, there just physically isn't the space to provide the parking. Okay? So we've got to really look at what it takes to incentivize development that will provide really good living conditions. I mean, part of the reason I always think is if you're living in a good environment, you're less likely to get a car and drive somewhere. It could be simplistic, but the point is that if we can provide these incentives through, as Eddie said, through bus passes, and so if we say to somebody renting in Collegetown, well, there's no parking, but hey, here's a free bus pass. And you say, oh, well, that's good. Maybe I don't need a car. If people still want to bring a car, I think we have to be clear about what the costs are and what that means. So, you know, if you can't park on the street, where are you going to park? And I think that's something that we're still tackling, because there are many parking garages on campus and, you know, in Collegetown and downtown. And so you know, we can't just address this for one particular development project. We can't say, well, we'll do this here and then we'll do something else here, because that's going to just result in chaos as more and more development. And so I think, it, as Eddie said, it's really important to hear from, I guess you'd call them the customers, that is students, you know, why they think they need cars in college now, and what will it take to raise the bar and say, well, I really don't need one. And for the people that do, let's have some clear options about what they can do.
Great. So if you could send us all the comprehensive survey, send me the comprehensive survey, and I'll send it out. And also just an idea of who to contact when we're starting to get students together to start this council would be two great things that we can start. And all of the information on the three comments.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming. We really appreciate it. So moving on to the next part of our agenda, announcements and reports. The first is the alcohol awareness program update. In lieu of Kat and Kate.
Yep. So, Kat and Kate are creating sort of a new alcohol awareness program. They're in the testing phases of their peer alcohol education program called Awareness. The workshops take place next weekend during student organization meetings, and the exact locations are going to be announced later. Basically, they're in these testing phases and plan for more widespread later, and they will come back with an announcement after spring break once they have some testing.
Great. Next announcement, fire safety update by EJ.
Hi, so I recently spoke with David Montgomery, the head of fire safety, basically, he wanted to get more out of the community and the department. We're ready and willing to be present at as many events as possible, like just getting the name out. They also have a Facebook page, which I wanted to do a plug for. It's Cornell EHS. You can like the page.
And
they have
some
like, so happy. Vice President of Public Relations, Gary.
Cool. All right. So as the emails all the students went out today. First of all, thanks a lot to Exec for helping to write it and Ari for sending it out and working with us on the back end. Really appreciate it. A couple things just for the future. First of all, I will make sure to send out, I realize I should have done this in hindsight, send out an email to all of you the day before so you know it's going out and you know what to expect if you get any questions on it. And I apologize, but you hadn't read it and someone asked you a question about it earlier. In the future, so we get one of these a month, roughly the same time every month. Ideally on Thursday of every month or something like that. So if you think you have something that all students should know about or you're working on something all students should know about, just reach out to me and say, hey, is it possible for this to go on the email to all students? And what we can do, we kind of craft it together as an exec, just at least definitely for content. And hopefully I can put your initiative or whatever you're working on it. Just also another thing, from last week's meeting, I think a few of you, say four or five of you, have blogged about your update, and that was all. So if we just keep that up, I would expect to have a lot more hits today, and I'll check on that and report to you guys. But otherwise, all these things are good, and you should just tell people you're doing them. So post your blog, put up your meeting minutes and things like that. And again, if you have any questions, I'll just take them now or after me.
Great.
I just wanted to let you guys know about an event that's going on next weekend that I really hope you all come to. Corporal Bordani, who's an Ithaca native, was injured in a suicide bombing in Afghanistan. He lost both of his legs and his eyesight, and the ROTC unit at Cornell and a bunch of other groups in the Ithaca area are doing a spaghetti dinner for him next Saturday. It's from 5 to 8 p.m. I'll put all those stuff in our Facebook group. But I really hope you guys come out. I know we talk a lot about service here, but he's definitely got a lot more than any of us have in the name of service. So I hope you guys will come out. Thanks.
All right, and just some assembly updates. Everyone should be on time. We start exactly at 4:45, so please try to be here right at 4:45. Otherwise, you will be marked as late, and those add up to being absent. So be here at 4:45. And we're going to go into executive session after this. So we've started basically a new format where we're going to update you on what we talked about at exec meetings so you guys have a broader idea of what the entire assembly and the goals of the assembly are going to be after each week. So we're going to move on to the business of the day. The first is Resolution 30, supporting the goals and ideas of Crohn's and colitis awareness. Vice President of Outreach to Bison is away at a conference this week, so Adam is going to be presenting for him.
I'm going to be reading what he sent me. You wanted this to be read.
You have 2 minutes.
Pretty long. Okay. What is really cool about this resolution is that it is modeled after the United States Senate Resolution 199, supporting the goals and ideals of Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week, along with an equivalent resolution in the House of Representatives. This was actually passed in the Senate last semester, and we successfully had Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week last semester. So what is Crohn's and colitis? They're both inflammatory bowel diseases that can have pretty terrible side effects. Currently, there's no cause or cure for either of the diseases, but there's been a lot of great research, including some done at Cornell. Increasingly, children are becoming diagnosed and often run into issues in school and even in college. As most of you know, I have Crohn's disease, and I am doing pretty well. I've been lucky to make it all the way to second semester senior year on time, as most of my friends with the disease had to miss semesters of school. I've spent the last 3 years on the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation's National Youth Council and was directly involved in the advocacy efforts at the nation's capital this past summer. Recently, I started a support group on campus for students with Crohn's and colitis. This resolution is important to help reach out all the students with these diseases as often many don't feel comfortable sharing their struggles. Hearts from Providence. So that's the resolution. So that's sort of the explanation of this resolution. It was on the agenda in December, and it's carried over. I'll read the therefore resolved clauses or briefly again. Basically, that the student assembly supports the goals and ideals of Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week. That we encourage organizations to participate in this week by raising awareness. Be it further resolved that the SA recognizes all people in the United States, particularly college students living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, and expresses appreciation to family members and caregivers who support them. So, are there any questions or comments about it?
Is there anyone that wants to speak on the resolution? Vice President of Finance,
what's going on during Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week?
I guess that's a question.
Want to know if there's any particular significance past us saying that, you know, we are aware of.
I'm sure he's probably
obviously, of course, we're going to vote yes on this, and of course, you agree with the mission of AIDS Awareness Week coming up as well. But I would just say that in the future, we've recognized a lot of days and a lot of weeks coming up, and I think that it's, unless we have something to show for it, something that we're going to do for it, some like actual, like true action that we're going to do, I think that there's no reason we would ever vote no on any one of these, and it might be a productive for us to come together and bring all the things that we want to recognize after like, the first meeting that we have, or the last meeting that we have of the year, something like that, just because I think it's, obviously we have a light agenda today, but in times when we're really trying to do a lot of things, I just don't see why to spend time on it, when of course we would all agree with the mission of anything that we would bring of this nature.
I think that's a good idea, in theory. I just don't think logistically, and given sort of how a lot of these things come up sort of on an ad hoc basis, that we'd be able to do it all at the beginning of the year. So I think it's something to think about for future years.
Great. Does anyone else want to speak on this resolution?
Call a question.
I just want to call a question. If there's been a second. Is there any sense? Right, there's been a call for affirmation. However, this is also a sense of the community. So everyone in the audience that's here actually gets a vote. So we're just going to do a placard vote. So first, can you just pass out the...
Sure.
Okay. You guys can be random. Okay. Go ahead, Charlie. All right, so if you're a part of the community and you vote in favor of this resolution, please raise your placards. All right, all those that oppose and all those that abstain. Great, so by a vote of 2-0, the special community approves this resolution. So for the assembly, for essay resolution number 30, if you vote in favor of this resolution, please raise your placards. All right, so I voted 24-0-0, essay resolution number 30. We're tabling indefinitely essay resolution number 31 on the request of the chair. So we're going to move on to essay resolution number, or request of the sponsor. So we're moving on to essay resolution number 32, Blue Light Survey, by Representative Valentine Gibson. So this is another resolution.
application that was presented in December, but because of everything we were doing, the guideline setting, we didn't have that too. So, that's a few minutes.
Yeah, we based up this resolution a lot on a resolution from, I think, last year. It's basically about an initiative to send out a survey to all undergraduate students about the blue light system. It's attached.
So pretty much, yeah, this was almost identical to the resolution that was passed, I think it was a year ago. It would be in combination or in tandem with CIT. They send out the survey. It's a two-page thing, 14 questions as of now, it's preliminary. And pretty much it's just reviewing the blue light system and seeing what students think about it and how effective they feel it is. And we can, if you guys want, I'm sure someone has a copy of the resolution from last year, but pretty much they're exactly the same and it was passed before.
From 2 years.
From 2 years, yeah.
Okay, first on the speaker list, you guys have been of public relations for Johnny.
Sure, so I was in the assembly 2 years ago. I was just curious as to if, I know that when you're doing a survey with the university and you actually want more data that you can act on later in the future, these are questions that you need to be unbiased. And surveys need to be written in a certain way in coordination with the Cornell Survey Institute. I was just curious, there's a survey research institute, and I'm curious if this survey was written in, or if they had any input into this process, or if anyone outside of us did, you know, just because you don't want to get these questions.
I'm going to actually pass that to Natalie, because I think,
yeah. So when I created it 2 years ago, I didn't have any human resource help, but now if we're going to send it to guys, so
I guess what we're, I'm not sure if we're past there. I mean, I guess we can, but I'm thinking that it was still a preliminary survey when we did send it out in December, and we were hoping for suggestions. So if you guys have any ideas as to how to change it, how to make the questions better, we're going to pass it along to Human Resources or CIT to make sure that these questions are as effective as possible.
And find me after,
but
there's just
a
one place where you have to go.
Yeah.
Next on the speaker list is Representative
Block. Yeah, I mean, I would say that, especially if we're going to, use the results from this and justify something like a blue light escort service, I think that the questions need to be a little, less specific. Like, have you ever felt unsafe walking between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.? Like, what if I feel unsafe at 9 p.m.? Like, what do I say? The same thing, do you think the hours 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. are appropriate for the blue light escort service? Like, most people who like the idea are probably going to say yes, even though they, aren't really going to consider the hours, you know? So I think that we should add, and obviously it, takes more time to do, but there should be some area where people, can actually say something rather than just clicking one box or the other.
Yeah, I mean, neither me or Sarah are really worried about how much time it takes. I think we're just interested in getting a very effective and yet concise survey, because that would be the most effective means in getting the best results. As I said, any feedback, if you could write down or make some marks on this preliminary survey, that'd be much appreciated.
All right, next one, thank you, that's good input. Next on the speaker's list is Representative Patel.
Just looking this over, I feel like it's just too many questions to ask about this, because, I mean, just personally, if, I got, 14 questions in my inbox, I mean, I feel like it's too many just for a preliminary survey, and I think just when you're going about, the preliminary one, to see if there's a demand for it, it's different than seeing how to actually run the program. So I think maybe just looking into, the key questions, do students want this, will they use it, how valuable is it to them, those would be more the questions to hit on rather than, should it be faculty or students running it, or just the exact hours?
Next on the speaker list is Representative Brown.
Going along the same lines, I think we just need to add a couple of questions for consideration that a lot of people carpool the library, they're going to use their cars, and maybe with a question of the sort of, would you be willing to trade your
Thank you.
Actually, so I have a question. Can we postpone voting on this till next week? We can have everyone's direct email to you and CC both of us, and try to have a finalized survey for next week, and then we can vote on it.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. I was going to suggest something similar, and especially to go through the Women's Issues Committee. So, Dara, can you set up a meeting with them to go over with the whole committee, if that's okay? And so go through that committee first and get it approved, and also work with human resources before we bring it back. So I think this is a great initiative, and it will be nice to have recent data to do that as well.
So just for everyone to had comments or people who didn't like raise their hands, it would just be great if you guys could open the resolution on your computer or just look at it after the meeting and then send us an email. What?
Can we have this
in general?
Yeah. Would you like to present it to Janice as well?
I'm just confused. Someone's pointing at me.
Okay, so you've been requested to examine the red lights, Janice, and the Women's Issues before you bring it back to the committee, just so we can get a lot of different input. So that would be great to start crafting better responses, because I agree, I think some of you are very needed or not so much.
Also, the previous resolution was R9 on October 1st, 2006. For your reference, that was when the average was.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Wait, 2001?
2009.
I said
I thought you said 2000.
Yeah. All right, so that's the end of our official agenda. We're going to go into executive session. So everyone in the audience, thank you so much for attending. If you have any questions, please let us know. But this is now closed for all the
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.